Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, June 29th, 2016. With me today, Kelly Goumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, John.
Oh, that was so cute. Hey, we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Atlassian. And we'll talk about them soon. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk about, so there's this new patent that Apple was granted. And the patent describes a system where you can use infrared transmitters with an embedded code in the light and then use that to disable the recording functions on a smartphone. So the idea is, let's say you go to a concert and the artist doesn't want you to be able to take photos, video, or capture audio from the show. So they set up these transmitters and they're beaming out infrared light, and you pull out your iPhone and you go to take a picture or capture a video, and it just doesn't work.
And I can already think of a problem.
Oh, I can think of plenty of problems. But John,
and it'll be
what's your
right
problem?
Up your alley too, because of your former life. So during the concerts, somebody has had too many beers. They start getting rowdy. They start beating on somebody. The police come in, and the police start slugging this guy. And then one policeman pulls out his gun and points it at the guy because he's drunk. And right away, thousands of people are thinking, "Uh-oh, something bad's going to happen." And they point their iPhone and smartphone cameras at the policeman, trying to get a record of this police incident, and suddenly their cameras have been disabled and something bad happens and there's no record of it.
I call this social accountability. And yes, I see this as a really big problem for any system where you can disable the recording functions of a smartphone, because the average person has become the front line of news and accountability for other people and for the government. And if you take that ability away, then you've created a scenario where you now have people or organizations that are able to operate with relatively little fear of repercussion. And yes, I know I'm being a little bit hyperbolic here, but...
No, you're not. Because then as soon as this technology gets developed, then somebody will say, "Oh, if it works at concerts, it'll work
here. Let's put it in streetlights.
We should put it here, yeah."
Sure. And okay, so here's the example I used in my article that I wrote about this morning. Let's say when the House of Representatives, Democrats, decided they needed to do a sit-in to force a discussion and hopefully ultimately a vote on dealing with assault weapons and whether or not there should be regulations that we don't have today, the Republicans shut off the cameras so that no one could see what was going on. The Democrats...
Now, just to make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about here, why it wasn't showing up on C-SPAN is because whoever's in charge of the House is in charge of those cameras. C-SPAN does not have their own way to record and broadcast what's going on in the House.
Right. So right now that means the Republicans. And,
yes.
And so the Republicans shut the cameras off so no one could see the sit-in. And then the Democrats pulled out their smartphones and they started capturing their own video and live streaming through Periscope and stuff so people could see what was happening. Had this technology to block a smartphone from recording been in place, then it would have been completely shut down and no one would have known that this was happening. So,
right.
Yeah, so these are the scenarios that concern me about a patent like this. Now, I do need to point out the way this patent is described, it doesn't sound like if Apple actually started building these transmitters and setting them up in concert halls and stuff, that they would actually do anything. Because it looks like you need to have some processor or something in the smartphone that recognizes the embedded signal in the IR stream. And if that signal can't be received and interpreted by the device, then it can't be shut down. So this would be something that would affect future devices.
Right. And at this people
would start carrying around point and shoot video cameras instead of their phones too.
Assuming that those didn't have the same technology.
Right.
Yeah. Or so they Android be phones.
Apple devices. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Android phones, you know, if you wanted to get around it. So the thing that I would point out about this is that this is one of those sort of double-edged swords in that a person who is performing in some capacity and wants people to put their screens down and enjoy it, as opposed to feeling compelled to have to record the entire thing or take a bunch of pictures or whatever. Somebody who's trying to get everyone to sort of put the phones down and rejoin this group experience that everyone's having. That is, like, I can see that being an honorable thing to do. Like, I would, you know, if I was on stage in front of people, I would want them to be enjoying what I'm doing and not sending it to Instagram or whatever. So there's that. And then there's also the scenario that we came up with. And it's yet another comparison this week to V for Vendetta. So we'll just go with that. For me, the thing to think about in all of this is, right now it's a patent. It's at this point, there is no prototype sitting in a particular theater that, you know, whenever you go to a concert there, your cell phone mysteriously doesn't work and no one can figure out why. And it's just an idea. Apple does things like this all the time. Some of them turn into reality, like an iPhone or Touch ID or, you know, different force touch technology, and some of them don't. And so this could be one of those things that by the time we actually see the technology, the patent that it relies on looks dramatically different than the thing that Tim Cook or Craig Federighi or whoever trots out on stage at an Apple event. So at this point, while it does sound concerning on one hand, it also could be not concerning at all. So right now, it would be a waste of energy to end up super worked up over something like this until it inches dramatically closer to reality than it is right now, which is basically, this seems like a good idea.
Considering all the patent trolls out there, sometimes it's wise to be defensive, even if the eventual implementation, as you said, Kelly, is different.
Right. And that could be all they're doing. And as our next story may tell us, there's probably a pretty good reason why Apple would throw a patent down on something like this.
Sure. All right. So before we move on, I'm going to toss this out just as an idea. What if Apple decided to patent something like this to stop other people from doing this very thing? Mm-hmm. And not so much that they want to incorporate this into a future product, but they want to make sure that that other companies aren't making something like this that they can then turn around and sell to governments, so that those governments could stop people from recording whatever things the government doesn't want people seeing.
You know why that sounds so logical? Is because when we were in the throes of the Apple versus FBI dispute in the spring, Apple talked about how once this technology that the government wanted them to build is out, there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. And so I like your theory, Jeff. I like that because this is one of those things where once you once the genie's out of the bottle and everybody starts doing it. Nice idea. I like that.
Yeah, that one just kind of came to me. So,
well, you're brilliant.
Why, thank you. And John, I think you're being a little generous. You called it a theory. I think it's still more of a hypothesis. But that said, hey, we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Atlassian. And Atlassian is a company that makes a really great suite of collaboration tools that you can use with your company, with whatever organization you have, to make sure that whatever project you have a bunch of people working on, or even a couple people working on, that it's efficient and that there are as few headaches as you can possibly have. So here's what they have. They have Jira, which lets you do task management. Kelly, you pointed out last week bug tracking and So any task that you have that needs to be part of your project, Jira makes that happen. Confluence lets you take all of the different content that you have for your team and put that into a common repository so that everyone has access to what they need. Then you have HipChat, so everyone can stay in communication in a group chat environment, whether that's text, voice, or video. And then you have Bitbucket. And that lets you take all the code that you may need to have for a project and assign it to different people, test and review things, and work with stuff in real time, which is kind of cool. So go check out their website at Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com, and check out what they have going on, because my guess is that there is something in there, and probably a few somethings, that it's going to make your next collaborative project go even smoother. So thank you, Atlassian. Okay, so Kelly, you gave us a little bit of foreshadowing. And
I did.
Yeah, so the second thing I wanted to talk about today, there's this guy. His name's Thomas Ross. And back in the 1990s, he drew up some ideas for what he called the electronic reading device. And this is a device that had a backlit touch screen, and you could read content on it. You could use it for other communication. It had a built-in keyboard, so you could type. And it had all of these features that sound very much like smartphones today. And
it sounds like a Kindle.
And it sounds kind of like a Kindle. It also sounds kind of like a Newton message pad. It also, or maybe a Palm, or anyhow, It sounds like all these different things that have come before. So he gets, he applies for a patent, and this would have been around 1993. By 1995, the patent was declared abandoned because he didn't actually bother to pay the fees to actually complete the patenting process. And now here we are with the iPhone 6S out on the market, and he has filed a lawsuit against Apple saying that they stole his idea and that they owe him $13 billion for taking his concept and turning it into the iPhone.
You know what's interesting to me about this?
Do you think he held his pinky to the corner of his mouth when he made that announcement of the money?
Very likely.
I used to think that people were just after money, and they were saying to themselves, let's work the system and maybe something can come out of it. But I got a story to tell you real quick. It was in the 80s, and my car would get hot in the New Mexico summer. And I got this idea that, you know, why not put solar cells on the roof? Of course, there's all sorts of engineering and manufacturing issues and cost and durability and so on. But if you put solar cells embedded into the roof and protected them properly from car washes and things like that, you would have electricity when the car was sitting still to drive a fan. And the fan would take cool air from under the car and run it through the car and keep the car cool. So 20 years later, I'm in I think it was in a car lot, and I saw a Volvo, and the Volvo had the exact same feature. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I thought of that 20 years ago. People think of things all the time, but it's a far cry between thinking of something and pursuing it engineering-wise and being serious about it and getting a proper patent and then pursuing it. And I think a lot of people just feel like, and maybe Mr. Ross falls into the same camp, as is, you know, he was doodling, he got some bright ideas, he was inventive, you know, and now all these years later, he's thinking, wow, somebody actually commercialized the product. Somebody actually put the engineering talent into it. Somebody actually knew something about semiconductors and radios and put something together. But I thought of it first, so I'm entitled to some of the money.
I'm thinking that you are on the right path. I'm also thinking this isn't going to work out well for Mr. Ross.
No, it's not.
So he filed for his patent in 1993, which is the same year, I believe, that the message pad came out. Am I?
That's about right. That's close.
I want to say I had yes. One. Yeah.
Which means that Apple was working on the concept for the message pad well before Mr. Ross created his drawings, because he did all of his drawings in that year. It was a period of just a few months in that year. So Apple's message pad does predate the drawings that Mr. Ross made.
Well, that was the era of the PDAs, right?
Yeah.
We were all into little PDAs, just little widgets with keyboards and screens, and we kept our contacts in there. The personal digital assistant, it was an archetype.
Yeah, it was awesome. So now, why didn't he file a lawsuit against Apple when the message pad came out, if he felt that Apple had stolen his concept?
And he was probably a teenager at the time.
Because honestly, if anybody stole it from him, it was probably Palm. Like, if we're gonna really talk about who ripped him off.
Sure, because Palm was a product that came along after the message pad and was arguably far more successful. And,
oh, absolutely, far more successful.
Yeah, and that led to the smartphones of the 1990s. And if you look at a BlackBerry, the description of a BlackBerry sounds stunningly like what Mr. Ross has described. Mm-hmm. And then he also, part of his patent, describes a thing where you have dual screens, so you can fold the thing closed or open it up, and you have dual screens together, which is something Samsung is doing, and there's no lawsuit against Samsung. Anyhow, I look at what's happening here, and I just feel like here's a guy that, like John said, realized, hey, I came up with this idea, and now feels like he's missing out because...
And he's entitled.
And he's entitled.
Self-entitled.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, he did... I think it was a couple years ago, file for a copyright on his design. And so he's got that. But, you know, still, that's years after the iPhone came out. And I'm having a hard time being sympathetic to his cause.
Incidentally, 9 years ago today, the iPhone was officially released out into the world.
Oh, hey, happy birthday, iPhone.
I can't wait to see what Apple does for the 10th anniversary iPhone. Maybe I'll have a vertical CD player.
Well, you know, if you take a look at Mr. I see what you did there. I see. All right, so if you take a look at Mr. Ross's diagrams, maybe we know what the 10th anniversary iPhone will look like. It'll have solar panels. It's going to have a slot for a floppy disk, and it's going to have an external mini keyboard, and you can fold it up, and it's going to be glorious.
We'll see one in the Batcave in the next Batman movie, so we'll know for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so... yeah, like I said, I'm not feeling the love for Mr. Ross's case, and I have been trying to keep an open mind, but as I went through all this, I really couldn't see it. If I'm wrong, listeners... Yeah. You're going to let me know, because I know you will. Shoot me a message on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. Shoot me an email. That would be observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes. I'm going to check all those places, because I really do want to know what you guys think. And with that, I think we're pretty much out of time.
I think so.
Yeah. So Kelly, thank you for being here.
Of course.
And John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. It was fun.
It's always fun. And listeners, go check out Atlassian, atlassian.com, and take a look at their collaboration tools, because they make some pretty awesome stuff. And thanks for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.